It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Especially when you got understanding. A little bit of understanding helps put the fear away. It's like, you know, you're afraid of what's in the dark room until you got a match. You know, so you do your little LED thing and you go, oh, I see what's up. Not as afraid. Well, we're going to be your little light in the darkness. Give you a little what's up. But I tell you, you know, there's a lot of reasons to be scared. We have, I'm wow. You know, a lot of things, you know, really surprised me. The Mantis, now this is a pilotless Air Force plane for Great Britain. Now, it's more than just a drone, okay? It's a robot fighter plane. Now, the one thing that's different about this, it's not a little kind of surveillance thing. This is a full-fledged, man, we got it all hellfire missiled up. And you're wondering, yeah, this big shock. I remember they made a movie about this. I don't know if you saw it with, what was her name, Catherine Beale. She's a good-looking girl that was on whatever, doesn't matter. So she's one of the fighter pilots, and there's two other fighter pilots. Jamie Foxx played one of the fighters, I think, and another guy. And they had a new team member added to their flight, their little wing, you know, their group of airplanes that goes up. And it was artificial intelligence. You know, it was a plane that went in there, and it got hit by a lightning bolt or something, kind of jacked it up, and it just went on a killing rampage kind of deal. So I'm thinking of that movie when I'm watching this. I'm thinking of the Cylons. I'm thinking of artificial intelligence. I'm thinking of the Matrix. I'm thinking of, I mean, you know, like an iRobot. Will Smith goes to the robot factory, and there's nobody there. It's just robots making robots, and he goes, so... robots making robots. That's just stupid. Well, here they call it the Mantis. The Mantis can fly for 24 hours without refueling. Do the surveillance job of helicopters, acquire its own enemy targets, and deliver a deadly payload, all without a pilot and crew. But should we be afraid of Britain's new robotic air force? The Mantis carries no human crew. The plane is controlled by a set of computer components far removed from the chips and boards inside a high-end personal laptop. The aircraft is the size of a medium-range bomber with a huge gray wing stretching across the hangar. It looks for all the world like any conventional aircraft. The wing, nose, wheels are all familiar. The engineers stand in front of it and are dwarfed by its bulk. Modules beneath the wings can carry air-to-ground missiles and precision-guided bombs, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a fighter plane without anybody in it. Yay! Wow! I remember having a speaker at the Freedom Summit in our first year in 2001, and it was going on about. The actions of government are oftentimes so removed from the actual pain on where the rubber meets the road on the legislation that they don't really feel or have any empathy for what happens to people. It's like fighter or bomber pilots in World War II. It was just little puffs of smoke. It's like you have a 500-pound bomb, 1,000-pound bomb, you have boom. Yep, just a little puff of smoke. Boom, 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 boom. Bunches of little puffs of smoke. But at least you were above it and you could see it, you know, happen. I mean, here you're in like a simulation seat in Langley, Virginia, a 20-year-old kid going, okay, boom, fire and forget. And, you know, he's off doing another target before he even sees a puff of smoke. So I'm just, is this we're so insulating ourselves from the rest of humanity. Anybody that advocates for this kind of warfare, I don't know how you can justify defending them from what anybody would do. I mean, you have people acting out against this kind of brutality against them. I don't know what you can say to say, no, you shouldn't be mad because what? Tracy Harmon, Army woman that got out of the Army, she went with a non-government organization or something, NGOs or whatever. There was a humanitarian thing. I think it was a Muslim women, whatever. She's not Muslim, but she hooked up with these people, raised the money, and we'll have her on the show tomorrow morning. And she went to Iraq. She left on April 15th, tax day. I remember that. And she went to Iraq, and she we sent her a bunch of little banners, like handheld banners that had, you know, Freedom's Phoenix on it, and antiwar.com, and Iraq Veterans Against the War, and Where is the Love, and the Revolution logo, and 4409, and, you know, and other stuff. And we just sent a bunch of these, yeah, and, you know, we'll help sponsor you. You go get pictures, okay? Well, one of the places she got pictures in was the side of a hillside that was a cave that was cut into the hillside. It had rocks and sandbags up around the opening and so on. She's holding the signs up there. And she said this was a village that she had to walk through a minefield following a gentleman that had a prosthetic leg, that he lost his leg to a mine. He had lost at least one, and I think maybe she said two sons to landmines. So you'll see these beautiful hills, you know, that they would normally farm, and they're just covered with landmines. So they had, follow me, do not stray off the path, you know. So she followed them. They made it to the village. The people were very enthusiastic about sharing their stories, and I'm sure we'll hear some tomorrow. Through the translators and so on, they were like, look, you know, this is what's going on. This is the truth. This is what's really happening. Get our story out. You know, help us, help us, help us. Tell the world, blah, blah, blah. So she's, had that burden as she leaves. You know, back they hear, I don't know if they heard or saw it actually, but they got word later that there was a rocket attack on that village after they left. Some of the people she was talking to were killed. So I'm going, you know, puffs of smoke, is that it? Is that all the responsibility you have of it? You know, I saw puffs of smoke. Now, at least infantry see it, but then, of course, it messes them up. I mean, in the head. My uncle was a Marine in Vietnam, and I remember when, you know, I was really excited about him coming back after a couple of years, and when I was little, and he was messed up. It was not the same person that I knew. And so I know that this is happening to an entire generation now. Well, what do you do? What is it that we're going to accomplished by being really, really, really good at surveilling everybody, eavesdropping on them, killing them, socially and economically engineering them? Are we trying to start something? Are we trying to be the targets? Are the elite, the rich, the protected, the influential in government, are they really looking to protect themselves? Was the Patriot Act to protect the American people from terrorists, or the government from the American people? So these are the things that need to be brought up. You know, these are the things that, you know, should be talked about. I was in Kansas last weekend, not this last week, a weekend before this, like 8-9 days ago. And we were doing the debate, and it was the first time that Wayne and I actually just went head-to-head in an actual questions-by-the-audience debate. And one thing that was very interesting is, I guess he felt he needed to say this, he got up and he looked at me and he said, you know, I hear that I want you to answer this, Ernie, that, you know, you're a 9/11 truther. And he goes on the audience, he says, if Ernest is elected LNC chairman, the Libertarian National Committee of the Libertarian Party, if he's elected chairman, he'll talk about 9/11. And I'm thinking, I'm going, well, I'm sure as heck not going to avoid it. I mean, I'm not sure I'd be wearing it as a lapel pin, but I mean, you know, I mean, 9/11 was the beginning of the Patriot Act. It was the beginning of, you know, all of this surveillance and rights restrictions and free speech zones and rendition and military expansion and debt. And I mean, but we're not allowed to talk about any of that or what started it or where. I mean, seriously? So what you're saying is you're not? Annie, absolutely not. No, heck no. We're not going to challenge the state that way. So, wow, I'm dumbfounded. I'm okay. You know, this makes this easier. So what am I going to do? When we come back, we'll talk about it a little bit. You know, I encourage you to call in. I'd like to get your perspective on this because I'm going to cause a ruckus. You know, man, they threw the gauntlet down, and it's time to do it. 866-986-6397. 986-NEWS. 866-986-6397. I'll share some more inside with you when we come back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Love ain't the same on the south side of town. You could look, but you ain't gonna find it around. It's the same old story, same old song and dance, my friend. It's the same old story, same old story, same old song and dance.
Yeah, it just keeps going round and round and round. It's the same old story, same old song and dance. You know, one thing that's interesting, though, is that we're starting to have, you know, I'm looking at this whole thing about these pilotless drones. Do you know there are 43 nations currently developing their own unmanned vehicles, including China, Iran, Russia? Some predict that the market will hit a value of 53 billion pounds. And the U.S. Army already predicts that its Air Force will be 80% robotic by 2020. I'm not even sure what that means. I mean, they're going to get, you know, keep as many manned and they're just going to get a whole bunch more unmanned. Or they're going to start attritioning, you know, the manned vehicle. I mean, either way, we're screwed. And it's wow. And you want to, you know, you had the acorn worker going around doing the census, getting the GPS of your front door within 30 feet of your front door as they're doing their walk arounds, saying, hello, we need to know where the hell fire missile needs to go. Wow. Let's go ahead and go to Jim in Michigan. What you got to say, Jim?
Hey.
Hello.
Hi.
Waiting on you, man. What do you want to talk about?
Oh, I'm sorry. I got lost in the thing there. So, Ernie, you're talking about how Wayne's getting on you about being a 9/11 truther. And I'm under the assumption, Ernie, that you're about the same line as I am, that 9/11 certainly could have been an inside job. But the biggest thing is, no matter who did it, whether the government did it, whether, you know, Islamic fascists did it, big government did it, because big government is who caused the problem, regardless of what it is.
Well, I think that we should, it's not off limits. I mean, he's saying no. I mean, he actually comes out and says, heck no, I'm not having anything to do with it. I don't want to talk about it. You know, heck no. And I'm going, okay. You know, I found that interesting. I mean, it was very, very interesting that he would take such an adamant position, especially to a group of libertarians. I'm like, who is he taking his direction from? Who really wants him in that position to do what? I mean, is it the number one job? Don't question anything about what the government has done in regards to 9/11 and legislation and actions and stuff since then. And I found that so telling that do I make this the center of my thing? I mean, that wasn't really it. I'm just, if I'm going to send something out, I want everybody to know what it is that he will not talk about. I'm going, you know, I don't think you guys really know. So I'm going to go, here's a DVD on, we'll decide whatever it is now. I'll pick one. But, you know, something, it'll be controversial. It'll be, you know, wow, these young kids, these revolutionaries, these people that have been the energy that you've been seeking all this time, they're not going to come over to the Libertarian Party if you're making these kinds of statements. It's not going to happen. So I'm like, okay, well, you know, so let's see what he does not want to talk about. So I don't have a problem bringing that up. I'd like to talk about a lot of other things, but if he's going to come out and give me an easy one and say, I'm never going to talk about anything about 9/11, I'm going, okay, well, I will. I mean, you know, is that what this is going to be about? It's going to be about challenging, you know, the worst thing that they've ever done. In the name of, wow. I mean, why would you think somebody in his position would say that? Who's he pandering to?
I don't have any idea how in the world Wayne Allyn Root ended up in the Libertarian Party.
Because like, he can. I mean, because we're, you know, not organized. Anybody that's about organization, man, they can get in and get a seat at the table. Because libertarians are not. They're like out being free and active and doing whatever. I don't need a shiny badge. They don't care. The only reason I'm doing this is defending those that just want to be left alone to go be libertarians and trying to save the definition of the word so that they don't take another freedom word from us.
Right. Like, my wife and her side of the family is definitely not libertarian. I was over at their house last year, or during the convention, watching it on C-SPAN, and they got really excited about Murray Ruwert. I'm like, that's what a libertarian is. And then Wayne Allyn Root shows up, and she starts talking about blah, 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 I have a smaller carbon footprint than Al Gore. And my wife said it best. She goes, you pollute more than anybody else. Douchebag is a form of pollution.
I
wasn't planning on going to a convention, but after I found out Wayne's the big runner, someone's got to go vote against him.
Well, I appreciate that, and I hope that we can encourage a lot of people. You know, my first inclination was to encourage a lot of the revolutionaries, these young people, to go and let's go, you know, kick butt and have fun. But then it got to be quickly I could see I would go to each of these groups. Let's say there's 100 people at various conventions in these small states, and I'll go in and I'll say, all right, how many of you have been a libertarian for more than 5 years? Now, I'm wanting since, you know, the last presidential election cycle, you know, one in 04. So I'm like, you know, how many of you have been around, you know, more than just a couple of years? And it's like 80% of them are new libertarians. And there's a revolving door that happens. You have all the real activist libertarians that came in the party looking to challenge the state, looking to go up. There were people that were abused by regulatory committees and taxes and the drug war. And what I mean, they are mad. They're angry. The whole reason why they come to seek help from the Libertarian Party, or at least a kindred with the other people that think like they do, was because they're mad at the government for something stupid that they did. And when you get there and they go, oh, no, we don't want to make them mad. we want, you know, our turn at the lever. We want to get the ring of power. You know, they're like, nah, I'm good. I'm going somewhere else. Well, they go out and they work for other libertarian organizations or causes or whatever. So as time has gone on, it's become obvious to me that there's more libertarians outside the Libertarian Party than there is inside. And they're far more radicalized. They're much more down. And by my definition, when you say radical, what that really means is at the root. You know, they get to the base of what the problem is. I'm a radical person for fill in the blank. Well, I'm striking the root. That's what strike the root means, is to be radical. So I'm going, these people are much more striking at the root of whatever the problem is and aren't distracted by the shiny objects thrown out by Fox News. So this is very important that I represent all of those people, which are the best of the best, of the people that really understand philosophically what's happening and what the future was and where their efforts are best directed. So I'm going, look, this is what I want to accomplish. When we go to St. Louis, there's going to be a vote. Somebody's going to, you know, assuming that they tried to do electronic voting, and they tried it a few months ago in Austin at the LNC meeting there, and it didn't work. two times in a row. So maybe they go, it wouldn't be prudent at this juncture. And then I was against it from the beginning because it's got its own problems, you know, like any other electronic voting. So hopefully it'll be done on paper. And you go there and you write it, you give it to your state chair, and he goes, gives the totals, you know, boom, you're done. It's faster than a bunch of people trying to get to a few machines anyway. So you have the totals. At the end of this process, there will be a winner as far as who gets the most votes. But I want to, anything that I do, I don't do anything unless I already know I won before I started. What do I want to accomplish? I want the decision to be clear. Did libertarians in convention select to join the revolution and challenge the state, or they just want a place at the table? That's what Wayne's clearly advocating. That's what makes it so much easier to do this, because he's clearly advocating that. I will get on Fox News a lot. I will be the face of. I will make sure we get attention. I will bring in the money. We can't be too controversial. We got to be moderate. We got to appeal to the Tea Party. We got to appeal to the soccer moms. We got to appeal to the conservative Republicans that are mad at the Republican Party. We got to not be libertarian. So I'm going, cool. Well, we need to have this debate and these two options so that after St. Louis, we know what decision was made, and will the LP be a tool for this fight or not?
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
As I'm getting older, your people get colder. Most of us only care about money making. Selfishness got us following the wrong direction. Wrong information always shown by the media. Negative images is the main criteria. Infecting the young minds faster than bacteria. Kids want to act like what they see in the cinema. Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding leading us away from unity. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling under. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling down. It's no wonder why sometimes I'm feeling under. Gotta keep my faith alive till love is found. Ask yourself.
You know you're not gonna have any love without truth. You know, and without truth, you don't have trust. What was that book? You know, it said, all I need to know, I learned in kindergarten. You know, seriously, you know, don't lie. You know, leave your neighbor's stuff alone, you know, and keep your hands to yourself. I mean, you know, it's, 10 Commandments. You know, a friend of mine said one time, he goes, you know why they did the 10 Commandments? I don't know why. Because they didn't know any better. You know, they just needed something, just some basic kind of, you know what? It's probably a bad thing to go around killing people. It's probably a bad thing to go take your neighbor's wife. It's probably a bad thing to take his stuff. It's probably a bad thing, you know, to tell your mother and father to get bent. It's probably a bad thing for you to steal stuff. It's probably a bad, you know, this is the basic stuff, but a lot of cultures, you know, it wasn't that way. I mean, you know, imagine you're Sparta. Yeah, we got to go find somebody to kill. You know, the British Empire, we got to go, you know, conquer somebody and take all their stuff and, you know, and I get to be a lord of something. You know, this is just different cultures. It's unique more than you think. The American culture, you know, truth, justice, the American way was really, you just leave people alone. It's a freedom thing, individual rights. It was a unique concept. Because until John Locke and some other writers, you know, that influenced a lot of the founders, you know, there was it was all this divine ruling thing. You know, by God, I have the power to rule you. And you know, so what do you have? You have the Pope placing crowns on guys and the king, you know, letting the Catholic Church have their church in whatever and doing. I mean, they just, you know, support each other. They got a symbiotic relationship right up until Henry VIII. What was it? The Pope wouldn't let him get divorced. He goes, you know what? I don't need you anymore. Catholic Church is out of England. We got the Church of England now. What, you think I'm going to allow the people that I rule to be, you know, have a dual ruler out of Rome? Let me think. No. We have Church of England now. Problem solved. And that's where you get the contention between the Irish Catholic and the Protestants. Because it's really all about, you know, who is your ultimate king, ruler, boss? That's what it always comes down to. So what do they do now? Your ruler is what? the flag, you pledge allegiance to a flag, and the republic for which it stands, which is what? You know, that's a good show. Let me mark that down. We should do the show on the Pledge of Allegiance. You know, a lot of people don't know where it came from. You know, Pledge of Allegiance. And, you know, this will be interesting for my daughter. She's helping me produce until the end of May. She's giving me some time because I just real behind. She's helping me. And she's learning a lot. Yeah, she's doing this, you know, booking a lot of the guests and researching, you know, some of the stuff for the guests and everything and the issues and learning how to put stuff on the site and getting everything scheduled and such. She's like going, wow. You know, I mean, she's lived this her entire life, but it's just, you know, it's kind of this fog thing over mom and dad deal. And all of a sudden now it's all starting to come together. She's starting to realize this. What do you think she's going to think when she starts to realize that all this pledging of allegiance that she did all her life was done by a socialist at the turn of the 20th century that was saying that Christ was a socialist, that got the American, at the time, what was the AEA, you know, the American Education Association, that was the vehicle by which he got it inserted into all the public schools at one time, at one year, and all these free publications that went around, and they pledge allegiance to the flag, and it used to be like a Hitler salute, and then I pledge, you have your hand up at 45-degree angle, you go, I pledge allegiance to the flag, or he's like kind of at your side, then you put it up with the palm up, like you're pointing to the flag. That looked a little bit too Nazi-ish, so they go, yeah, we're going to change that. So they did the hand over the heart thing. Then they added, you know, one nation under God and added the under God thing. So here it's just like, you know, it's the king and the pope kind of deal. You know, you have the church and the state kind of coming together. Okay, as long as we support each other, we're all part of the same thing. We got God and state together. Well, then it's okay. And, okay. Then they can do whatever they want. As long as they got, you know, God listed on the deed or something. I mean, I'm wow. We'll do the history on that. I think you'll be very surprised. I mean, you can do a Google search on it. History of American Pledge of Allegiance. I mean, I bet you that'd come up right there. So I'll make a note. We'll do that. And how I knew about it was a gentleman from Cato. What happened? There was a local guy here, Goldwater Institute. I had him at the Arizona Breakfast Club, big conservative, you know, group and everything. And he handed me, just kind of off the side, you know, we're friends, and he handed me a piece of paper, 8.5 by 11, that was a copy of a newspaper article that a friend of his in college had written about the Pledge of Allegiance. And that sent me, and that was years ago. And I went and I looked at him, I'm like, seriously? And I went, checked it out. I'm like, yep. So what happened? Well, here's another good little story for you. I get a call this weekend from a gentleman. His name is Tom Rawls. Tom Rawls was a Maricopa County supervisor Republican that he and his wife Linda were well-known libertarians. I mean, they were libertarian philosophically, but, you know, they're Christian and they worked inside the Republican Party, but they knew when they were doing a lot of bad stuff. And they were building the Bank One Ballpark, which was the baseball stadium for the Diamondbacks when they first came to Arizona and created that franchise. So we were heavily opposed to that. That was major, hundreds of millions of taxpayers subsidized, blah, blah, blah. And we were going, no, heck no. So I filed lawsuits against a lot of stuff, and it's a long story, but the bottom line was is that inside, this county supervisor was letting us know what was really going on. You know, we had a little bit of extra information. So we filed the lawsuits, made a big woo-hoo about it, and eventually it went through, but we caused a lot of problems and got a lot. They even do continuing education of lawyers. I have some attorney friends come to go, hey, was that you, Hancock versus McCarroll, you know, in the stadium? I go, yeah. They go, yeah, it sounded like you. You know, they're going, wow, you know, did you know that that's continuing education? They do an entire day class on that one case. And I go, yeah, you know, I've been hearing this for years. And the reason was is that it was a very, very telling case. I knew that the appeals court and the Superior Court and appeals court and Supreme Court, and they're going to do whatever they want. It's hundreds of millions of dollars we were talking about. But I wanted to highlight exactly what they were doing, how they were doing it, who they were doing it with and to. And it did that. I'm like, ooh, look at what's happened here. The press would report it. You know, everybody knew, and they just knew that's how it works, and they're going to rip you off anyway. All right, cool. So the reason it became part of continuing education is because it really forced them to change a lot of the laws. Because they're like, yeah, we're not going to be able to keep surviving this forever. I mean, you know, this is pro se litigant Ernie causes enough problems. God forbid we have, you know, somebody with a big giant law firm and some press credit. You know, we had bad enough of just him. You know, we don't want to do this again. So they change some of the laws and they do different things. During that time, there was a county supervisor that was, there's five here in Maricopa County, and he was really against what they were doing. They were able to get through what they wanted. He later would run as a candidate for governor as a libertarian in 98. Now, he lost the primary because he was unwilling to spend money against a libertarian primary candidate. There was one that came in that said all kinds of stuff and spent money doing it. He just said, I'm not going to play this internal thing, which is to his credit, because he could have easily trounced on it and just spent a bunch of money, but he's just like, no, I'm not going to play. So he barely lost. The other person was not the greatest candidate. And so he kind of got a bad taste on the experience. But what he did do is he got elected to Mesa City Council. While he was there, he still, you know, well-known libertarian. He's just running nonpartisan race there. What happened was a big controversy went all over the country about the city councilmen that would refuse to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. And he goes, no, not while we're at war. You know, I mean, I would have, there's 15 gazillion other reasons I could come up for, you know, for not doing it. But his whole thing was, I'm not going to pledge allegiance to a republic that's off, you know, killing people. I'm, you know, because what am I pledging allegiance to? It's not the city of Mesa or the state of Arizona. They're having me as a city councilman here in Mesa pledging allegiance to a republic that's totally out of control. It's not a Republican. They're killing everybody. So he go into, you know, a big explanation. And he's an attorney, too. So, I mean, you know, he's a educated, reasonable, articulate guy. So he made this point, and we're like going, oh, okay. Yeah, we'll go help you out. So we knew the next month that they were going to bring it all on. Here come the Boy Scouts. Dozens and dozens of Boy Scouts there. They're going to carry up the American flag. They're going to go up there, going to pledge allegiance, and they're going to make a big shoe at it. Welcome to the really big shoe. And Tom would be there. He'd just sit down. I'm good. You know, I'm not doing anything. I'm just not standing up.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock. And, you know, I rambled into the break there. I don't know where I left off. I wanted to get this one story out, though. Let me go ahead and kind of, you know, get to the part to where I want to make sure you knew what was going on. We had the Boy Scouts showing up at a Mesa City Council meeting where we had a city councilman refuse to give the pledge or stand up for it, you know, when they did it, because his reasoning was, look, man, you know, I'm a representative here of the people of Mesa, you know, state of Arizona. I'm going to pledge allegiance to a republic that's killing people everywhere, you know, and using our money to do it. And he goes, I'm good. I'm not going to do it. The Boy Scouts came in and man, they made a big deal. They're all there. What we do, we went ahead and printed out information, trifold, two-sided pamphlet, 8.5 by 11. You know, it was a nice little pamphlet. They had the information that Pal Gamble had put together, senior editor of Freedom's Phoenix. He put it all together, got it ready. Go down there and we pass it out to these Boy Scouts and the Boy Scout leaders and the people that were there as they went in, as they went out. And, you know, they're thinking they're being all patriotic and everything. What happens when they learn the truth? What happens when they find out that that was done by a socialist in order to try to get us collective under one yoke on a national, federal, using the mandatory youth indoctrination camps, the public school system, in an effort to bring us all under one thing? Because they knew they couldn't get done what they wanted until they won the psychological battle. They needed to bring us all collective under one yoke. Keep in mind, you know, when this was being formulated in the late 1800s, turn of the century, this was within a couple decades after the Civil War. You know, Reconstruction had taken at least 10 years. The war went until, you know, mid-late 60s. So you're looking at 77, about in the 1880s, you know, news didn't travel, you know, that fast and so on. So you could see that as they're, he's going around preaching Jesus is socialist, it was Bellamy, that was his name. And he's going around, you know, doing this. So he was creating a collective by which he'd get the country to do whatever it was that he wanted. And one thing that they knew they had to do is they had to indoctrinate the youth. I got time. It's all good. We can do this. We can walk it right through. Well, first you got to have a national public school system. Well, you know, that started. You know, they had public education in the states. They created the national, you know, the American Education Association. They used the unions. This was all part of the socialization thing. You know, the socialists were, you know, America was, you know, nice ripe plum, man. We're going to go get it. Well, there was a lot of efforts that went against that. I remember this one cartoon that we put up. It's called Make Mine Freedom. You know, we'll go ahead and play that because I think it does a good job of making it clear that this argument's been going on for a long time. And this was done by some... Yeah, here it is. I'll go ahead and just put this bad boy up. Let's go ahead and play this. I think you guys will, you know, get something out of it. Harding College is what did this. Make mine freedom in Technicolor.
America is many things to many people. To a 17-year-old kid, it's the malt shop on the corner. To Grandpa, it's the front porch in the cool of the evening. To Mother and her family, it's church on Sunday morning. And to Dad, it's his favorite relaxation.
Off.
It's the Cracker Barrel philosophers in Crabtree Corners, and it's the tycoons in Wall Street. It's all races, creeds, and religions. It's freedom to work at the job you like. Freedom of speech and to peaceably assemble. Freedom to own property. Security from unlawful search or seizure.
What you want, Flatfoot?
The right to a speedy and public trial.
Now, this was done in 1948.
Protection against cruel punishments and excessive fines. The right to vote. And to worship God in your own way. It is these freedoms that have made America strong.
Okay, okay, so we got our freedom. But management's lousing up everything.
Labor is at fault. It's ruining the country.
My constituents, as your elected representative, I can assure you labor's right. Management's right. I'm strictly neutral.
Labor? Management? Politicians? Phooey. They can't tell corn from oats.
What? It's only strike! Strike!
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up, folks. Here's the answer to your problems. Dr. Utopia's sensational new discovery isn't. Ism will cure any ailment of the body politic. It's terrific. It's tremendous. Once you swallow the contents of this bottle, you'll have the bountiful benefit of higher wages, shorter hours, and security. Enormous profits. No strikes.
Remember, you're the big boss.
Government control. No worry about votes. Name your own salary. Bigger crops. Lower costs. Why, Ism even makes the weather perfect every day. And now then, because we are introducing this amazing item for the first time in this country, it isn't going to cost you 1 cent. All you have to do is sign this little scrap of paper, and you get your bottle absolutely free.
I hereby turn over to Ism Incorporated everything I have, including my freedom and the freedom of my children and my children's children, in return for which, said Ism promises to take care of me forever.
pushing him.
Oh, I'm pushing him.
I'm pushing him. Too much.
Get out of the way. Get out of the way.
Pardon me. Pardon me.
And who are you, my good man?
I'm John Q. Public.
Ah, my fine friend, you're just in time to share this generous and gigantic offer. Sign right here.
Mind if I read it first?
Hurry up,
don't bother to me.
I don't want to be here first.
Keep your shirts on, boys. No, including my freedom. Freedom? Well, sign away my freedom. Why, this is ridiculous.
Don't be corny, brother.
Sure, our system of free enterprise.
And that is just 4 minutes into a 9-minute discussion of how our country works. And it was just a simple cartoon done in 1948. And I'm starting to see, we had it up on Freedom's Phoenix probably, I don't know, a couple of years ago, and I'm starting to see it come back more and more and more, people sending it to me. And if you did a Google search on Make Mine Freedom, or you just do a YouTube, Make Mine Freedom, it'll pop up, you know, and it's entertaining. And this is the kind of, and where would you display this color cartoon? In the movie theaters. Now, alongside in the movie theaters, you had Paramount Newsreels. You know, they're doing their little propaganda thing. Then you'd have this that would come up and they'd play. And then you didn't even have color television back then. So keep in mind, you know, this is 1948. Harding College is coming out on this thing. Why would they do this? To do an animation back then, I mean, you had to actually hand do the animation. This wasn't free. You know, this was a lot of work. So why would they do this? Well, after 1948, you know, after World War II, you know, you had, it was competition of the isms. Socialism, fascism, they got all kinds of isms. Well, you know, there were people that understood the uniqueness of what made America, America. It was, you know, freedomism. I mean, it was, you know, the lack of isms. So, you know, it's free markets and free minds. How do you instill that in the people that they understand even what it is and would see the benefits of it? Heck, they even know it was a philosophy that even exists. I'm going to be controversial in what I plan on. I'm not even sure exactly what I'm going to be sending to all of the national delegates to the Libertarian Party convention in St. Louis at the end of May during Memorial Weekend. But it's not going to be unnoticed. And I'm not really sure what to send because there's so much information and there's only so much I can do, but I'm leaning towards, you know, Invisible Empire. And Jason Burmis, you know, he's a young man in his 20s. He's the perspective he has. He's like, wow, does anybody know this stuff? I mean, nobody's taught. Why aren't they talking about this? Why? Who's challenging this? Where is this? And I'm going, you know what? I'll support you. You did the effort. I think you did a good job. I'll put it in there and tell the people, look, man, if you don't know this stuff, you're just begging to be a slave. So that's what where we're going. You know, I'm going to go ahead and will it, you know, could I play more politics? Could I be a little more mainstream? Could I be a little bit more, you know, non-confrontational and controversial? Yeah, easily. It's pretty easy to do that. But I tell you what's difficult. It is very difficult to be able to just tell the truth. A lot of times it is. I mean, for me, it's easier than most. But, you know, when... we're at a weird time when telling the truth is an act of treason. I against whom? Well, we're trying to advocate for you to be able to make up your own mind, for you to own your own body, your own wealth, your own property, your own liberty. It's yours. And if you have a government that's not there defending your ability to have it, defend it, advocate for it, they're probably the bad guys. We'll have more good show for you tomorrow. We'll see you then.